I'm Cary Newman, executive editor at Fortress Press, and I am a founding member of the Early High Christology Club.
Cary, great to see you at the library, man.
It's good to be here.
Thanks for being a part of this podcast, The Stone Chapel.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think you brought me here under false pretenses, though.
I did. I asked you to do one thing, and now I'm asking you to do the podcast.
Well, no, I think that I was going to do a podcast, Only Murders in the Library.
Only Murders in the Library.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's great to see you. Tell us a little bit about you, for those who don't know Cary Newman.
Oh, for the last 25 years, I've been an academic book editor. I've run a university press, worked for two denominational presses, worked for an academic publishing house in Germany, and I've been a teacher, a writer, and so that's me.
Yeah, you have done a lot in your career, and especially, maybe the most important thing is that you're a founding member of the Early High Christology
Club. Alongside you, David.
Yeah, we are the two surviving members of that club.
That's true.
So, very briefly, let's just sort of describe that. What is the Early High Christology Club, first of all? And second, we need to recite the founding myth.
Well, since our friends at Wikipedia failed to put it on as a legitimate club.
I know.
It's crazy.
Right.
But it was a loose association, and I do mean loose, but mm-hmm. a very profound association mm-hmm. of like-minded scholars from all over the world, mm-hmm. Jews, Christians. These were scholars who were interested in Second Temple Judaism, scholars interested in New Testament, scholars interested in Christian origins, scholars interested in early Christianity. And everyone who belonged to the club was committed to a kind of effort to explain how and why Jesus came to be worshipped right alongside God.
And this is something, early high Christology, the high Christology means a kind of divine Christology, right?
Correct. That Jesus is God.
Jesus is God. Now, at the founding meeting, there was a guy at the end of the table named Morris Casey.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was Jimmy Dunn and Morris
Casey. Jimmy Dunn and Morris Casey. And Morris Casey had written a book, From Jewish Prophet to Gentile God.
Yes.
So he had kind of a long, low, and slow kind of movement, right, at that particular point. So not everybody who was at the meeting were sympathetic completely to the idea.
No. And not everyone is. An early high Christology is just one of several competing theories for understanding the way in which early Christianity either did or did not venerate Jesus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there are those who think that the veneration of Jesus was an imposition from outside. Mm-hmm. It was borrowed from either the Roman emperor cults, or it was an imposition learned first from mystery cults, or it was the transposition of the mystery religions, dying and rising God, onto Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a large amount of evidence that early Christians crafted from the stones quarried from Second Temple Judaism a way to speak about Jesus that was unparalleled mm-hmm. in the first century. Mm-hmm. Indeed, it separated Jews from Christians.
Yeah. Eventually, there is this the dividing or parting of the ways. Now, when you say early, how early are you talking
about? Oh, really early.
Okay.
Now, but, yeah. So, Martin Hengel
famously
said more Christological development occurred in the first 36 months of the church than in the successive 2,000 years. And I make it a habit never to disagree with Hengel when he's right.
Hengel is right about a lot of things,
yes,
and everything.
Yes. He was right about that.
He was a member of the Early High Christology
he
Club.
He was. In fact, gave an inaugural address at Cambridge. Mm. And the picture that he took alongside Larry Hurtado at that occasion, who introduced him that day, is Hengel sporting one of the EHCC's famous coffee mugs.
Coffee mugs, yeah. You know, that there are a lot of people that ask me, how do I get one of those mugs?
Well, it's an eBay item now.
It's an eBay item?
It is.
Is it really?
You cannot. I think I have three or four left of the original.
I think
batch.
I have one left.
And we had some new ones made, as you remember, for a conference we did in Edinburgh a few years back, but the older ones are collector's items.
Yeah, yeah, that's very good. Now, there was this moment that all this sort of transpired and came together. I think it was 1995 or 96, was it?
Yeah, there's some debate. Like any good historical event, there's always a debate that it
tends, among the eyewitnesses.
Among the eyewitnesses.
Because you and I were the only two people there. So
we can agree to something and, you know, make it canon.
Make it so.
Right, right. It was in Philadelphia. That's what I
was. Was that Philadelphia?
It was Philadelphia.
All right, all right.
And it was a cold, cold, cold night, if you remember. Mm-hmm. We had just ended a seminar at the Society of Biblical Literature, and those participating that late afternoon decided just to run off to dinner. And this included yours truly and you, along with Alan Siegel, Larry Hurtado, Jimmy Dunn, and Morris Casey.
Yeah.
And we went to a Greek restaurant that Alan knew about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was so cold, and we showed up about 7:30, and the line was out the door and down the side of the...
We got the idea it must be a really great restaurant.
Restaurant, that's right. Or so the story goes. And... so we're standing there waiting to get in, and two of the servers in the restaurant who were out taking a smoke break said in modern Greek, look at all these pigs lined up to eat our food. And Alan, who spoke modern Greek fluently, said, yes, and they're going to pay for it as well. And the two workers were so surprised that Alan spoke modern Greek that they ushered us right in.
Yeah,
and
somehow
we got a table.
We got to the front of the line.
We did not wait.
Yes.
And as we were sitting down, Alan just began to order up appetizers and drinks for everyone.
I think he could order food in 17
different
languages.
Right, correct. Like and as the food came and we paused to begin the meal, I lifted a toast. And I said, to an early high Christology. And everybody put their glasses up to
the toast.
To the toast.
Except
for Jimmy Dunn, who pulled his back.
And
he said,
Morris Casey.
He said, well, Morris did as well, but only at Jimmy's, when Jimmy did it first. And Jimmy said, no, 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 not to an early high Christology, to a high Christology. Because Jimmy believed that it was late.
It was by 90 or so. It was 50 years later or something like
that. So everybody thought for a moment and said, okay, to a high Christology. And so we lifted our glasses, and Morris then, with a twinkle in his eye, pulled his glass back and said, no, no, to a Christology. And we all laughed a good laugh.
Yes,
and tipped our glasses and commenced with, you know, just an amazing feast of food that Alan had ordered up.
Yeah.
And that was the founding myth. And so for about 20 years, that group, plus anybody else who could drink, who could partake of the cup in a worthy manner, also joined. The group grew to be probably as many as 40 or 50 people.
Yeah,
I'd have
yeah.
to go back and look at the email strings. We elected fictitious officers of the club. We kept fictitious minutes.
Yes. Maybe that's why Wikipedia won't
I'm sure.
put us there.
Wikipedia has no taste.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
They have no taste.
Yeah.
So there's the club.
So Alan Siegel, who was a Jewish scholar,
right.
he taught at Columbia University,
right.
New Testament guy, he believed in an early high Christology.
He did. He believed that was the best way to explain,
It. Yes.
To explain it.
Yeah. How did this come about in historical terms? How do you, not right. necessarily did he
believe it himself,
believe it himself, but think that that's probably the way
the
that
best
it,
explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. The most explanatory power is found in those right. kinds of things. Right. And Larry Hurtado, who was a professor at University of Edinburgh, I called him in a book the dean of the early high
Christology. He's the godfather.
He's the godfather
of early high Christology.
Yeah, exactly. But it went on to attract a lot of interest, and people knew about it and such, yes. and people yes. wanted to belong to it, who were convinced themselves that the best way to understand the development of early Christianity is not to posit that this happened at the Council of Nicaea, yeah. or you know, at the latest part of the first century, but in fact within a year or two or maybe three of the founding of the crucifixion of Jesus and the belief in the growing belief in the resurrection, that was the best way to understand Christology. Yeah. And that against the backdrop of Second Temple Jewish ideas, they were already resident in the world at that time.
Yeah, Jews living during the Second Temple period on the eve of Christianity's birth believed that there were all sorts of intermediary figures that, you know, got on and off the heavenly escalator going both ways, traveling to heaven to see divine visions like the Apocalypse of John, but there were lots and lots of other Jewish apocalypses. And there were also theophanies and angelophanies and personified attributes and angelic figures and resurrected and second life kind of patriarchs who appeared on earth to human beings to give direction, to answer prayers, to rescue from hardship. And so Jews speculated about these divine beings, these intermediary
angelic figures are just right? so key.
And there's lots of interpretive work about Jews spent time reading their Bible and providing explanations for how was it that Elijah could be hooverized right in front of their eyes. And so there's just lots and lots of exegetical activity. There were Jews who claimed to have a kind of experiential-based encounters with these figures. So Second Temple Judaism on the eve of Christianity's birth was a petri dish, just full of speculations about what goes on between heaven and earth. Yeah. And Christianity fits right into that. It fits right into that matrix.
You know, the idea that heaven is one thing and that the earth is one thing and there's a hard line between them. Right. It really is, it's sort of like, you know, the upper floors in a way of the same structure in some ways, that it's not meant to be, oh, heaven is way out there and earth is way down here, but they really do come together, they meet. Now, so what are some of the most important books, you think, that reflect this particular perspective of an early high Christology? I mean, I know Jimmy Dunn wrote this book, Christology in the Making, back about 1990, where he posited that, yes, early Christians did come to view Jesus in this way, but it wasn't immediate. It was kind of slow. It took a while. There were a variety of different influences, like wisdom ideas that come in and play into that. But in fact, it was a bit later. But there are scholars, and some would even say a consensus these days, that this happened rather quickly. Do you think there's a consensus?
I think there is, so much so that there is alternative literature being built and which presumes the consensus that begins its discussion of what went on back then by assuming there's a consensus among scholars that it happened early and happened quickly. And so the important books, I think you can't go down this road without mentioning a book by Martin Hengel, Between Jesus and Paul. It's a collection of essays, but every one of those essays rings the bell for an early high Christology. Our own dear Larry Hurtado's Lord Jesus Christ, which was his magnum opus, certainly by the time it was published.
In 2003, I think it was. Yeah.
Was the final bit of a decades-long push on this hypothesis, and really a consolidated around Larry's book in many ways.
That's why we call him the godfather.
He had written a book about a decade earlier, 15 years earlier, One God, One Lord, that announced this hypothesis. And Lord Jesus Christ is the big footnote to it, if you will.
Yeah.
But there's many, many others. Lauren Stuckenbrook's work on the angelic refusal tradition, Clint Arnold's work, Charles Geeshan's work on the name and angel of the Lord traditions, Jarl Fossum, who was Geeshan's teacher.
Well, let's not forget your own book on Paul's glory Christology.
Yeah, well, I just paddled out and rode the wave, David. I wasn't there at the beginning.
Let's
talk about this guy who wrote Yahweh texts in Paul.
Well, that's right. Who is he?
David Capes.
But a lot of us contributed to that, and a lot of us made those kind of arguments at a time when it was sort of
unfashionable
to say. Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of the myth of God incarnate kind of movement that started back in the 60s, I think it was, you know, was trying to unsettle what scholars and what pastors and teachers and leaders were thinking about it. But we're trying to reclaim that and say, wait a minute, you're misreading the evidence. Mm-hmm. The evidence here is very strong that this movement started rather early and that there is a divine Christology among the very first leaders, thinkers, influencers, those kind of things.
I would put it this way, that if all Christians really mean is that Jesus is the Messiah, the long-awaited Redeemer figure for Israel, then let's all go home. It's not the claim that Jesus was the Messiah that was incendiary. Mm-hmm. The incendiary claim was when Christians gathered and began to venerate Jesus right alongside God, when Christians started redirecting Old Testament Psalms to God.
To Jesus.
When Christians began to read their Bible and substitute
The word Lord, take the word Lord, that references the divine name, and say those are really references to Jesus.
Right. It's the reapplication of Scripture to Jesus.
Right. Donald Jewell's work too, all of a sudden. I mean, that was Messianic exegesis. Yes. That was one of the early books.
Another member of the High Christology Club.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Now, unfortunately, everybody at the table that day have passed away.
Yes.
And
except for you and me.
Except for us. I mean, eventually all of us will be gone. But our books and the influence of the early High Christology movement will still be around and debated among scholars.
And I think one of the things I learned from both Alan and from Larry and from you and from Don and from Nils Dahl, who, you know, God rest his soul, that you can't just simply say that Christianity was the result of fourth century politics.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It wasn't. If anything, the fourth century was just recognizing the ship that was launched many, many years ago.
Hundreds of years earlier. Ago,
right. That came to rest where it did in the fourth century. Mm-hmm. Neither is it Christians borrowing from culture to reimagine, to redress, to redrape Jesus in royal garb. It's that Christianity has its unique origins in a very singular claim. And claim that Jesus is Lord is rooted in the resurrection itself. And really, Christianity stands or falls with the resurrection.
Mm-hmm. This is recognized by Paul 20 years after the event.
And this is what I learned from Alan Siegel, was that he really believed, that Paul really believed that Jesus was resurrected. And
it wasn't just an empty tomb.
No.
It was the fact that Paul had these encounters, close encounters.
Yes, of the Jesus kind.
Yeah, the Jesus kind.
Right,
yeah.
And that explains Paul's religious life and his writings and his apostleship.
Yeah, everything else sort of starts with that. I mean, that's the starting point. Yep. And everything else can be explained through that. So the Early High Christology Club, we need to have another meeting of the Early High Christology Club next time.
You know.
But it's hard.
It's hard.
You know, because you and I have
all
lost.
All good things must come to a conclusion.
Yeah, exactly.
And really and truly, I think as frivolous as it all sounds, it hasn't been. There's 30 or 40 or 50 books that have come out of this group. Mm-hmm. And we've held two conferences together. One in St. Andrews, one in Edinburgh, and there have been conference volumes that have come out of it. And you could almost bookend 1989 and 2019 as the period at which the Early High Christology came into being and reigned. For that period. And those volumes are, well, the Proceedings volume from St. Andrews is one of the most cited books in scholarship.
Yeah, yeah. And more recently, you know, you and I worked together. We conspired together to do a fish rift for both Larry and Alan Siegel.
Alan Siegel at the same
time. That, we ought to really talk about that on another podcast, because that was a lot of fun conspiracy.
Fun.
But I tell you what, that book is cited constantly. I'm on Academia website, and I think two or three times a day I get references that somebody's citing that volume.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's really an important volume, and it does some great essays in that volume. It's called Rebecca's Children, I think. No, that's not the right name. What was the name of that book? I will think about it. I'll put it in the show notes. I can't think of it now. It's not here in my office, or I'd pick it up.
And I published it, and I can't.
You published it? Anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, thanks for being with us to reminisce a little bit about the Early Higher Christology Club and what it means and the influence that it has had in most recent conversations about the development of early Christianity.
Well, it's good to be here, David. Thank you.
Glad to do it. Thanks to Janet Seifert and Kathy Capes for helping us produce this podcast. Jocelyn Solis is responsible for promoting the Stone Chapel podcast on all of our social media. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Foundation. If you have questions or comments or just want to be in touch, email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. That's podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. Thanks for listening.